This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry, with Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, general manager of Tabor Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to HPC Wire Soundbite for Friday, June 5th. HPC Wire Soundbite is now available on iTunes by searching for HPC Wire Soundbite. I'm Addison Snell, general manager of Tabor Research, together, as usual, with Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire. Good morning, Michael.
Hey, good morning, Addison.
Michael, it's not just you and me today. We're going to be joined later in the program by Cycortex co-founder and chief engineer Matt Riley, who will give us his perspective on his experience there. But first, we've got news from AMD with the rollout of its new 6-core Opterons. Michael, you were covering that story. What do you think?
Yeah, this turned out to be probably the biggest Opteron announcement for the year for AMD. It's their 6-core version, so it's their biggest core version. And unlike some of their previous rollouts, it was ahead of schedule. In fact, it was 5 months ahead of schedule, according to them. So it was a big story just for that. Most of the major OEMs and HPC vendors quickly hopped on, embraced the chip. They announced their servers and workstations with Istanbul upgrades, and it was sort of a big deal for AMD. It's quite a bit different now from what it was this time last year. If you remember June of last year, AMD was sitting on their older 65 nanometer technology. Intel had already moved to 45 nanometers. AMD was just finishing rolling out the Barcelona chips. It was a disastrous rollout with the chip bug. The company seemed like they were reorganizing the org chart every day. There were execs bailing out on the company from month to month. It was really chaos there. And now, a year later, they seem to have put it back together. They spun off the chip making company into a separate division, and now all of a sudden they're turning out chips ahead of schedule. And this one looks like it's a pretty good chip. There've been some early reviews, and against the quad core Nehalems, it doesn't quite match performance in all categories, certainly, but it's definitely in the game now. It's an interesting chip, and I think a lot of people are going to be buying them if they're looking for increased performance over the next several months. What's your take on it?
Well, Michael, you make a good point about them being back in the game, because one thing we found in our studies on loyalty in the HPC industry is that the area in which users show the least loyalty is to the processor vendor, that users are largely ambivalent to who the processor comes from. They just want the best that they can get in price performance. Now, Intel has tried to start to change that game by doing programs like Intel Cluster Ready in order to differentiate on the software and tool side, but ultimately price performance rules the game. So for AMD to try to make a comeback from, as you said, a year ago when they were really lagging in chip sales, they're a long way from when they were actually out shipping the Intel processors when Opterons were still fairly new. So it is interesting to see them coming back, and there will be a new dynamic there in the industry. Personally, I think among their announcement, it's not just the improvements that they're doing on the cores, but I was interested in seeing the new generations of hyper transport with HT3 and HT Assist in order to try to improve with the CPU to CPU and the memory bandwidth on these systems. One of the statistics that they were citing in their launch presentation is that they were improving stream memory bandwidth by as much as 60%. So that, I think, is going to be a critical part of the chip technology, especially as you see HPC users with applications that they're still trying to assign one job per node and trying to get the maximum performance they can out of individual nodes. Memory bandwidth is going to be a big factor in doing that.
Yeah, definitely, and I'm glad you brought up the HT Assist. That's a especially interesting technology. It hasn't been tried in the field, but it looks like it's really going to help on servers. There are the 4-socket and 8-socket servers in that space. 2 sockets, not so much. In fact, I think it's disabled for 2-socket systems, but for those bigger systems, it's going to be an especially interesting technology to watch. So we'll see what develops there, but Yeah, it's just interesting to see what's going to happen over the next several months in the server market against Intel and Helm chips. In general, I mean, it's a tough time to be introducing new server chips into a market. We were just reading about the server market in general. Revenue's down by 25% from last year. Gartner was just talking about that. And they don't expect to see growth in the server market until the beginning of next year. So both AMD and Intel are going to have a tough time sort of selling into this market. But in a way, even though AMD might be a little bit behind in performance at this point, they might have a better case in a depressed market, since you can probably build less expensive systems around their Opterons than you can within the Halems. And then also, if you're a loyal AMD customer, you can just plug in these new Istanbul 6 cores into your current system, so you don't have to do a forklift upgrade. So that's really good news when you're talking about reduced budgets. So they actually might have an advantage in 2009 against even maybe somewhat superior performing the Halem chips. So it'll be interesting to see what happens the next year. And then in 2010, we'll look forward to see a whole new game as both vendors roll out their 8-core chips, and it'll be a whole new dynamic there.
Well, you make a good point, Michael, referring to the overall server market. It's important for us as HPC people to remember that these chips get deployed a lot more widely than they do in HPC. Now, the HPC market, we're forecasting at Tabor Research, won't be off nearly as much as the overall server market. We are forecasting a decline for 2009, but only on the order of about 6 or 7%, and that's basically because we've got a strong government sector, which I'll talk about a little later in the program, that's offsetting some of the losses that we have, for example, in lengthening sales cycles for the commercial side, and for the loss of a lot of the endowment-based business on the academic side. But nevertheless, your point that the server business is off overall is going to squeeze the processor vendors. We know that it's been squeezing a lot of system providers, interconnect providers, and just in last week's program, Michael, we discussed this in depth with regards to Cycortex and Quadrix and Woven Systems, and Cycortex in particular has been very interesting to us because this is a differentiated server provider for the HPC market, and there's still a lot of talk about the role that Cycortex was playing there and what's going to happen with that technology. Fortunately, we're joined today by Matt Riley, who is the co-founder of Cycortex and also its chief engineer, and I'm looking forward to talking to him. Matt, thanks for taking the time to join us today.
Oh, thanks, Addison. Thanks, Michael, for inviting me.
It's our pleasure. Matt, the first thing I wanted to ask you, we're talking about the role of Cycortex in the HPC market. Can you tell us what was your inspiration behind founding Cycortex?
Sure. Let's see. In a nutshell, Judd Leonard and I had been working on EV8, the last new alpha core design that was shut down when Intel bought the team. And I spent a little time working on Itanium, and I had this nagging feeling that wasn't where I thought the industry ought to be going. And Judd and I got together and noticed that there was a tremendous, very rich infrastructure for doing hardware with small teams and a need in the market for something that was a high processor count cluster that was engineered purposely to be a cluster, as opposed to, at the time, most clusters were something that some folks called cows, a cluster of workstation on a shelf. We knew that we could do better than that. And so that the concept, combined with not working at the time for anybody else, combined with a very rich infrastructure out there that allowed people to build hardware without having to build giant teams, made it all possible and interesting.
Matt, ignoring for a second the sudden disappointment at the end with everything shutting down, up until that point, were you happy with how things were going at Cycortex?
Let's see. I guess you're never entirely happy with how things are going, because if you are, then you've probably run out of ideas. The first generation product, as some people have pointed out, was a little weak in terms of memory bandwidth per processor. We made up for that by finding places where it didn't matter as much. They were fairly narrow segments, but there was money to be made there. And the second generation product was coming along rather nicely and, of course, addressed the memory bandwidth issue very aggressively. So on the whole, I'm pleased. I'm certainly pleased with the way the teams were working, pleased with the prospects for the company. It was just one of those things, as I've noted elsewhere, you have to get everything right. You don't get many second chances, and there were a couple of things, the economy tanking when it did and the difficulty in finding that niche for the first generation kind of hurt us. But seizing the green mantle was a bit of a surprise, and it was going very well. I was very pleased with that. So on the whole, I'd have to say I was pleased with the technical side and the way the machines were working.
Matt, this is Michael. You talked about getting into that niche. Do you think there's room for a differentiated system provider in the market today?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because testament to that is that Psycortex was making sales in a market that was very, very hard for other people to penetrate. And in fact, the big companies weren't all that affectionate towards high-performance technical computing. There's a place for a player that's going to dedicate themselves to high-performance computing and understanding the customer. There's also a place in the market for custom-built solution. That is, a solution that's not maybe aimed at one particular use, but aimed at the family of uses in high-performance technical computing that generally exhibit two major interesting features. One of them is that they are memory bandwidth hungry. The other is that they're hungry for intercommunication bandwidth between the processors. And if you can build a machine that's better than strapping together Ethernets with PCs that were designed to run Excel, I think you've got something there.
Yeah, I think you're right. Do you think this architecture, the work you've done, is going to get carried forward in some way? Do you think this will not have gone for naught?
Ideas seldom get lost in the computer industry. They get resurrected and reinvented, and credit gets passed from generation to generation. So I have no doubt that there will be somebody picking up this approach. And certainly people are looking more closely at the fundamental computing model that was behind Psycortex. That is, that time to solution is a combination of arithmetic, memory operations, intercommunications, and I.O., where Psycortex just blew the roof off the joint as far as communications and provided enough I.O. sockets that the customer would run out of money before they ran out of sockets because the other end of the I.O. complex is where most of the money gets spent. So, yeah, I think the model is certainly long-lived. We've demonstrated that there are things that you can exploit in that model that the off-the-shelf duct tape and Ethernet or even duct tape and InfiniBand approach doesn't get you. The other thing that I think Psycortex showed is you can build an interesting company that addresses the high-performance technical market and still keep all of the software open. And that was... when people talk about the collapse of the high-performance technical business in the 80s and early 90s, they often forget that back then we had to roll everything ourselves, new compilers, new OS, new everything. And nowadays, all that stuff's done for you. So, yeah, I think the ideas will live on.
Yeah, I think Psycortex has started a whole new conversation in the HPC industry, so I hope it does get carried forward. I did want to ask you, what would you say to Psycortex customers today? I just got an email this morning from somebody who said, I think it was a Lockheed Martin customer, who just bought a Psycortex the day Psycortex announced they were going out of business. And I know there's a lot of customers out there with Psycortex gear. What kind of advice would you give these guys today?
Yeah, first thing I'd say to them is thank you, because... they had faith in the architecture model. They had faith in the product. And also thank you, because I learned a lot in talking to customers over the last year or so. I won't apologize, because apologies don't actually do anything for anybody. I will point out that the things that made the system compelling to them are still there. That is, the system delivers excellent communications between the nodes and excellent power efficiency, compute per watt and compute per cubic foot. And especially with Lockheed Martin, since I have an idea of where that system, what that system's being used for, what they learn from it will be portable into in the long run. I'd like to point out to everybody that, again, PsiCortex was built on an open software model. So as opposed to the collapse of earlier high-performance computing companies, where you were left with an orphaned operating system and an orphaned set of compilers, all the code's out there, and there are people interested in making sure that code continues. So there are user forums being formed. There are cadres of expertise that they can draw on for help. I, for one, have an SC72 on my desk that I use fairly often. So I'm interested in seeing things move forward.
Matt, you're talking a lot about things moving forward. You made quite a splash with your last endeavor. What's the next thing we're going to see from you?
Well, right now I'm working at finding an academic position. I got my PhD back in 89, but realized that I really wanted to build some things before I started teaching. And I did that, had a great run at Digital, learned an awful lot in the Alpha Development Group. Judd and John Mucci and I put together PsiCortex, and I had a great run there, really enjoyed it. And now it's time for me to go do some teaching. So that's what I'm working on.
Matt, we really enjoyed having you on your program, and Michael and I wish you a lot of luck in your next endeavor. Thanks for joining us today.
Sure do. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt.
Michael, we had a great interview with Matt Riley, and we've got a couple of minutes left. Were there any other stories in the news this week that you wanted to comment on that caught your eye?
Yeah, the one that that I wrote a little bit about this week was the NVIDIA story about their new GPU product. They've made a GPU module that fits inside a 1U server box, and with their launch partner Supermicro, they've introduced a CPU-GPU server, something they hope to get out there to build really large-scale data center-sized systems out of these monolithic CPU-GPU server blocks. It'll be interesting to see what the uptake is. Of course, they've already got their own GPU-only server boxes that you can connect to CPU servers, but this is a little different. It puts everything together, so you get a little bit of an economy of management and integration there. So it'll be interesting to see if people sign on to these, and then they're also hoping for and expecting more OEMs to join in and buy these modules and build their own CPU GPU servers, which I expect they will. Just we haven't seen the announcements yet. If you want to hear any more about that, go to HPC Wire and read the article, and there's quite a bit about it in there. So, Addison, did you see any other stories this week that you'd like to talk about?
Well, you did do an excellent job covering that story, Michael. I read your article, and it's a good testament to the ongoing adoption of GPU, which we talked about in previous podcasts. I did have one other story that caught my eye, which was actually in the New York Times, written by John Markoff and Christopher Drew, talking about the uptake of system administrators who are fighting for contracts in the cyber war business. And what we're seeing is potential growth in the government sector in HPC in 2009. I think this is indicative of a lot of the opportunities that come from the current administration's policies. The current approach to warfare, honestly, is opening up opportunities in intelligent warfare, in the networks and computation that need to support that. And then we've also got the stimulus bill potentially providing more opportunities. So although the economy overall is soft, there's certainly still pockets of opportunity within HPC, and that's something that we're going to be tracking on an ongoing basis.
Very good. That's something I'll be looking at too. That's certainly interesting to be tracking the stimulus money and what the government's going to be doing, and the whole cyber warfare story is certainly an emerging application that I think is going to be getting a lot more attention. Thanks for mentioning that.
More stuff for us to keep looking forward to in future weeks, right, Michael?
Yep, you bet.
Always a pleasure talking to you. We'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, have a great week, Addison.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Download this podcast every Friday afternoon at www.hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.